Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Talk Saturday on WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, let me be the first to officially welcome you to the afternoon noon hour here on WGR Sports Talk Saturday. Welcome back, Nate Geary, Corey Griswold, hanging out with you for the next 2 hours. We are headed back to the Wester Hotline now because ESPN's Teron Davenport joins me now to talk a little Titans. Teron, first and foremost, man, how's summer treating you?
Oh, man, the summer is treating me awesome so far, man. Everything is going just exactly the way I wanted it to.
It's not bad that, you know, the Titans are giving you some stuff to write about in the middle of June, because not everybody gets him. our mutual buddy, you know, Marcel Louis-Jacques of ESPN, he doesn't have as much fun stuff to write about here in June. So count your blessings, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the roles are reversed this year. Because
right.
Make no mistake about it, last year, you know, around this time, you had some really good stuff to talk about, and Stephon Diggs becoming Bill.
Yeah, 100%, man. And listen, the AFC is starting to get pretty crowded in terms of the wide receivers that are going to be playing on this side of the conference. And not only that, the quarterbacks. I mean, the AFC as it stands right now, and I just had Jeff Lloyd of Locked On Browns talk with me. The Browns, the Ravens, the Titans. You can make the arguments the Colts are. We don't know what they'll be with Carson Wentz, but like the AFC is stacked, and I'm wondering what your take is on a move like going to get Julio Jones. Now, listen, the Titans didn't really address losing Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis and some of the other pass-catching weapons that ended up walking in the offseason. So this made a lot of sense. Eventually, they were going to have to address it. But how much do you believe the trade for Julio Jones, just knowing they're going out and getting one of the game's best receivers, was maybe a reaction to just how deep this AFC is, and if they really want to contend and win a Super Bowl or be the team that represents the AFC, that they needed to stock the cupboards a little bit on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I don't think it was a reaction necessarily to the AFC as much as it was to them doing, self-evaluation, and that's something that this franchise, you know, they specialize in, you know, being self-actualized. And they realize that, hey, the passing game is going to have to balance out the rushing attack because teams are going to stack the box to stop Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. So you have to have some type of threat. And losing Corey Davis obviously hindered the passing game somewhat. It would have, you know, even with Josh Reynolds coming in and selecting Des Fitzpatrick in the fourth round. But nevertheless, when you bring in someone like Julio Jones, that just changes the whole dynamic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, defenses, you know, it'd be interesting just seeing, you know, if they have the audacity to stack the box, because when you do, and even a team like the Bills, you know, Tre'Davious White is one of the top corners in the league, one of my favorite players. So, I mean, yeah, you got him against A.J. Brown or Julio Jones, but what else do you have?
Right.
And that's the problem. When you create that one-on-one matchup like that, it really tends to be advantage Titans when you got Brown and Jones.
So, Ron, you know, I've had you on the show multiple times over the last couple of years, and you and I mean, we probably have had a few conversations around Corey Davis about, you know, when it was going to be his time. And I thought, you know, his final year in Tennessee, actually probably was his best season. I mean, he stayed healthy, he was productive, and, I mean, that production ultimately got him paid in New York. But You know, thinking about replacing Corey Davis with Julio Jones, how you're talking about the one-on-one matchups, which I love, but like, how dynamic now does this offense become with Julio Jones? And I guess kind of the follow-up or the second phase of that question or layer to that question is, what do you say to maybe the people out there that maybe are minimizing this move because they say, well, this is a team that's going to run the ball anyways. This is a run. Their identity is running the football. Why should this move potentially scare teams other than to say, well, hey, they'll beat you one-on-one on the outside, but how many times are they going to throw the football?
Yeah, I mean, I think really they're going to take the quality over quantity approach, and that's something just in talking to wide receiver coach Rob Moore. They've always had that mindset where, you know, they pride themselves on being able to get 1,000 yards on 50 to 60 receptions. So when you bring in Julio Jones, I think that is actually just going to help increase that quality of reception just because – you look at Corey Davis, you look at Julio Jones, both big guys, strong, powerful guys. But I personally believe you get more yards after the catch, more bang for your buck, so to speak, when you're looking at the receptions with Julio Jones. And it's just, it goes back to the mindset too, right? This team, they have a physical mindset. It's just like Coach McDermott and the Bills. They want people to understand that when you come and play them, it's going to be a backyard fight, and it's one of those ones where, you know, you're going to have to ice up afterwards because it's a physical confrontation. And I think that extends to the passing game with a team like the Titans. I mean, you know how A.J. Brown is after the catch, but then when you get 230-pound Julio Jones, a guy who brings physicality just as far as running with the football, running through tackles, and then the speed he has, I think that's where the upgrade is, whereas – you know, I talked to Teddy Bruschi, Super Bowl winner, ESPN analyst. You know, he was on my show talking with TD this week, and I talked to him about that. And he said that 10 to 15-yard reception turns into a 20 to 30-yard reception with Jones. And that's really just in a nutshell how it will be better. And then on top of that, like, you legitimately have a guy where it's like, okay, do I want to go one-on-one against him with no safety help over top? I think not. So now we're going to go 7 in the box as opposed to 8 consistently. And that's where the benefit's going to come. And with Jones and Ridley there in Atlanta last year, they were 16th in the league facing 8-man boxes 12% of the time. The Titans were number one in the league facing them 23% of the time. So that tells you right there just kind of how defenses look at the hierarchy of the Titans offense is Derrick Henry and then the passing game. But now with Julio Jones, as he said, on Thursday, it's pick your poison. And there's just so much more that you could do. I think it's a really good thing. And then, not to mention, when teams stack 8 in the box against the Titans, Derrick Henry is a load to deal with. And a good example of why he's so good against 8-man fronts, you go back to the Titans versus Ravens, the divisional title game in 2019-2020, what he was able to do, right? He broke a tackle, Matt Judon's tackle at the line of scrimmage, and he had the speed to pull away from everybody. Because when you stack 8 in the box, that leaves one-on-one on the outside, and you got your safety help over top. Guess what? You get to the second level, and you have a guy like Henry with the speed that he has, it's deuces. I'm gone. Yeah. And that's really what happens. So, you know, it just really is a pick-your-poison approach to this team. And even when you pick one of the poisons, it's like, he still does good against 8-man fronts anyway.
ESPN's Teron Davenport joining me on the Wester Hotline. He covers the Titans. We're talking a little Julio, talking Titans. Teron, you know, I'm interested too, and you know, I know, you know, we've had conversations around the quarterback position quite a number of times in Tennessee. And, you know, since taking over, I think there's this misconception because Ryan Tannehill isn't, in terms of arm talent, he's not the Josh Allen, he's not the Patrick Mahomes or the Aaron Rodgers, but I think the misconception about his ability to throw the deep ball really extends around arm strength and not really around the accuracy of his deep ball. He is one of the more accurate, if not, I think maybe last two seasons, one of, if not the most accurate deep ball passer of throws 20-plus yards air through the air. He puts it into a bucket, and I wonder, you know, and some of the quotes you heard from Julio, like, I want to go play with a quarterback that is going to go throw the ball, let me go get it, I'm going to run past defensive backs. And although that may not fit the bill for Tannehill, like, he's just going to overthrow defenses and he's going to throw it past defensive backs, I think there's an argument to be made that he might be one of the more underrated, you know, deep ball passers in all the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely holds true. And, I mean, you look at just off of play action, the way he's able to place that post route and just make the guy accelerate to the football, like that's next level when you have the ability to make the receiver, you know, run faster. Like he doesn't have to slow down. He has to speed up to get it, and that creates separation. So absolutely, he's really good on that. And that's the thing, right? You know, last year you had Khalif Raymond. Look at over the last 2 years, Khalif Raymond. I don't even think you ever heard of him. But this guy hit on like 4 to 5 deep shots, you know, including a touchdown against the Ravens, you know, to put them up by 2 scores in the divisional game. And then even you look at the Colts game towards the end of the year, they hit him on one, and that kind of sealed the deal on that. So now you're going from Khalif Raymond to Julio Jones. That's just going to get even better. And then just to kind of further drive the point home, Josh Reynolds said one of the reasons why he wanted to sign with the Titans was because of Tannehill. And he was like, man, Tannehill will put that thing up there.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, I think at the end of the day, we could it's exciting to talk about this offense. I think there's a lot of facets to it. There's a lot of layers on how they can beat defenses. But, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you cover the team. You know this more than anyone. I think the questions now turn to the defensive side of the ball. And, listen, there was a lot of the Titans, for being a team that I feel like is going to be a contender this year, they had a lot of player movement. And, I mean, total inverse of the Bills, where the Bills kept everybody. The Titans had a lot of player movement. I mean, they moved a ton of defensive backs. Noah Dory Jackson, and they move on from Malcolm Butler. What does this team look like in the defensive backfield? And do you believe, you know, and I think I was actually recently, funny enough, talking to a Titans fan. One of my buddies that lives here in Buffalo is a big Titans fan. He was telling me, listen, that the defensive backs that they had last year, there's, in his mind, he's like, the only way they can go is up. He didn't think that they were very good and they were overpaying guys and they moved on and they've got younger guys to replace them. What is your confidence level with this defensive backfield? And are you maybe concerned that it might hold them back from maybe beating a team like the Chiefs?
Well, you know, let me tell you this. Your friend that's a Titans fan, you ask him if he's subscribing to ESPN's Titans page, and you also ask him if he subscribes to Talking with TD on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I'm sure he does.
If he's not, you better slap him. Tell him he needs to do that. But no, in all seriousness, talking about that defense, and you mentioned how that secondary has been revamped. They gave up 36 touchdowns last year through the air. That was the second worst in the league. And that is atrocious. So you definitely, when you have $10 million in one guy, 14 in another, and six in another, that's why they're gone. So you bring in Amani Hooker as a starter now, not a reserve. He moves up to be next to Kevin Byard. You have Christian Fulton, second-round pick, entering year two. He had an interception a couple OTAs ago, picked Tannehill off, and he's planning on having a big year. But then you look at the rookies, right? Elijah Molden is going to be that nickel guy, and he's a very NFL-ready player. You watch what he did at Washington and just the way that he could play. You know, I told him, I talked to him, I had him on my show. I said, it's buy one, get two free with you because, you know, you could play nickel, you could play outside, and you could play safety, and you do all those pretty well. So that's something. And then the big factor is Caleb Farley. Mm. And if he could get back to how he was at Virginia Tech, now, and that's an if, because, you know, backs are a funny, like a fickle thing, so you got to be careful with it. But he seems to be on track to be able to get where he was. Pre the second procedure, he was a 4.26 guy, you know, right before that in March he was doing that. So, I mean, if they could get him to where he needs to be, that is going to be a tremendous boost to that defense. So I think, you know, when you look at the secondary, they have to be more aggressive, and you love to hear Kevin Byard say that. You know, he said we ought to get up and challenge receivers a little bit more, because when you give them a free release, you know, it's like going against the Bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
You give Stephon a free release off the line of scrimmage, I don't care if you're Jesus. You're not covering him. He's going to kill you. You know, and so that's the thing. You got to get up and you got to challenge them. And even doing that, you know, it's still difficult. But when you disrupt the timing, right, you get that chatter at the line, you disrupt the timing, that makes Josh Allen or whoever the quarterback is, they're looking there because typically that's going to be the first read, but they're going to come off it. So when they come off it and they progress further through their reads, guess what that does? It gives the guys up front a little bit more time to get home, and that's really important because, you know, Denico Autry, Bud Dupree, these guys, you know, combined 13 sacks, coming to a team that only had 19 sacks, which was the third worst ever by a playoff team.
Yeah, and I think the defensive line is kind of the next place to really talk here, Teron, because they go out and they draft Rashad Weaver too. They really, and this is a Mike Vrabel team. You know, if nothing else, this is a team that's going to put assets into the defensive line, into that front seven, and they certainly did. And this goes beyond just this last offseason. I mean, we're talking about Jeffrey Simmons now going into what, year three, coming into his own sort of after missing part of that rookie season with injury. Harold Landry, who I think is really a pretty nice player on the edge. You mentioning adding Bud Dupree. How much better do you believe this unit is now that they've gone out and they've made these moves? And do you believe that this is an edge unit, especially with the addition of Bud Dupree, that might be one of the better ones in the AFC this upcoming season?
Well, I don't know that I would call them one of the better ones in the AFC, but I think they'll be solid. And, you know, the addition of Bud Dupree or Danico Autry, it adds what, you know, we like to refer to as hashtag that dog. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And when you get that mindset, just that killer approach, and I'm not saying the guys with the Titans didn't have it, but when you bring guys who are known for, you know, just playing with a killer mindset, a violent way of wanting to do things, Bud Dupree, if you watch him, he's one of the most violent players in the league. So when you add that to your team, it just uplifts that mindset and just helps further develop that. And then you also look at the pass rush culture. You know, that's something that needs to be established with the Titans. I mean, they don't have guys previously as far as up front that, you know, when it's time to make a play, they take it personal and they say, man, it's my job to make the play, and I'm going to be the guy to do it. That's specifically what Bud Dupree told me when I asked him about the pass rush culture and bringing that mindset to the team. So that right there is just a really good factor just off the field. But then when you get on the field and you see a guy like Bud Dupree that could play so well against the pass but then also against the run and just cause so many problems, there's stunts and twists and different things like that they'll be able to do up front with Jeffrey Simmons and those type of things. So it's going to be a really good opportunity just to see how they could get going. But it's just, in my opinion, you got to approach Bud Dupree's situation with caution because the man tore his ACL
right
in December. You know, so I don't think, like, I would be surprised if he comes out in September and he's wrecking shop. I don't think he's really going to be himself until, you know, late October, early November, which is fine because that's when they have the toughest stretch. They have a five-game stretch. The Bills are in there, the Rams, the Seahawks, man, it's the Colts. The Ravens, too, I believe. It's those four teams. I don't remember the fifth team off the top. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a tough stretch. And that's when I need Dupree at his finest. But, like I said, with the secondary, those guys, you know, being more aggressive and not playing off, you know, third and three, you're playing 8 yards off the ball, you might as well just pick the football up and move it to the first down marker because, you know, you're going to give it up. And that's why they gave up 53% of the time. Teams are getting, you know, converting first downs on third down opportunities. You know, you can't win like that.
No, certainly not. Listen, before I let you go, I've been having this discussion with friends. I have it online a lot, and you know, I think the tiered teams of the AFC, some are debatable, you know, whether or not people are going to include the Titans. I think they should now with Julio Jones. Where do you stand with the Ravens? I'm interested in your thought here because they go out, they get Sammy Watkins. I actually like the move a lot. I thought when he hasn't been healthy in Kansas City, that offense loses. So it lost a little bit. Now, don't get me wrong. They're still the best passing offense in the league, and they've got unbelievable weapons. But, you know, when they're forced to go to, like, some of those third, fourth, and fifth receivers instead of having Sammy Watkins on the field, it was noticeable, at least to me, a little bit. Now, if he could stay healthy, that's the big question mark. But I loved Rashad Bateman, loved that draft pick for the Ravens.
Yeah.
My question, and this has sort of been my question to everybody that talks ball, is will it matter who they bring in at wide receiver if Greg Roman can't turn his elementary, you know, route scheme and route tree into a more diverse, more layered approach? Otherwise, like, it doesn't matter if they have Julio Jones, Rashad Bateman, and you name the receivers, if they're running the same five and six routes that teams are sitting on and know they're running, does it matter who they bring in at wide receiver?
Hey, I mean, that's an excellent question. You kind of made the case right there. But, you know, I'm going to add Tylan Wallace to that mixture as well. You know, so they have a really nice, solid group. And those guys that they added, right, Watkins, Bateman, Wallace, those are really good additions. But
here's next level for you. They added Keith Williams, who was a receiver specialist. He worked a lot with Devontae Adams and, you know, a lot of guys in Texas. They come to Texas, and, you know, he works with them doing footwork and those type of things. And he is someone that's going to be a pass game coordinator. So now you have a guy who's brought in specifically with a receiver background to incorporate more passing concepts. So that should help them. But then the low-key move that no one is really talking about that really stands out to me, and it stands out to me because T. Martin is my guy anyway. But, you know, he's the receiver coach, and he was a receiver coach at Kentucky. He coached Randall Cobb there, USC, Nelson Aguilar, and a bunch of other guys, and Tennessee, Josh Palmer, you know, who came out and was a sleeper in the draft this year. I say all that to say that they've made a concerted effort towards that specific thing, and I think that's going to make that passing game better. And I'm looking forward to it because I'll be honest, like, I'm sick and tired of people saying Lamar Jackson's not a good passer.
Me too, man.
He actually is, and I don't know how you lead the league in touchdowns and not be a good passer. You know, so if you're saying that he's a bad passer, then that's watering down the whole every other quarterback because he had more passing touchdowns than him in 2019. So, I mean, it is what it is. There's going to be bias and people who don't want to acknowledge that they were wrong in evaluating them. But I think overall that passing game is going to elevate. And it doesn't have to be top tier because
That's right.
that rushing attack
That's
is
right.
the best in the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's spot on. It's just, you know, I look at it, and if you're the Ravens, it almost becomes impossible to say, listen, like, we know, we understand Greg Roman needs to add layers to this offense for this to ultimately get us over the top, but it's hard to fire a guy that is leading the number one rushing offense for the last 3 years. They're making the playoffs. They're in the division race every year. That's why it's so difficult if you're a Ravens fan to say, hey, listen, a lot of this blame goes on Greg Roman, and I think everybody agrees, but what are you going to do? You're going to fire the guy that's leading the number one rushing offense in the league? Yeah, you want that team to be better passing-wise or just more efficient passing-wise, but, man, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place in Baltimore with Greg Roman. And listen, I mean, as a guy, I liked Greg Roman here, but even he, his thing, it ran a little dry and stale here too, and I think eventually this is a make-or-break year for him regardless, but it's hard to have the conversation of do we fire a guy that's leading the number one rushing offense? Like, that's just not an easy conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, you don't fire them, you supplement them, and that's exactly what they did.
You're right.
So, I mean, that's really just, in a nutshell, you know, the way they are. I don't think they're in a rock and a hard place. He's got to get creative and find some ways to, you know, offset his tendency to, you know, to run so much and just expand what he's able to do passing-wise, and I think that's what they're going to do.
Awesome, man. As always, thank you so much for joining me, bro. Thanks for making time for me on the weekend. Enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll be talking soon as the season approaches and that Bills-Titans matchup comes up. So really looking forward to it, man. Again, thank you so much for making time for me, as always.
Yeah, for sure, man. And Bills Mafia out there, I appreciate the way you guys travel, so I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing you guys come here to Nashville. Just be a little easy on the takeover, man. I like to hear the home crowd cheer, too.
They will travel hard to Nashville. That's actually probably Bills Mafia's favorite trip is Tennessee. So that's like, here's the crazy part, Jaron, is the Bills have played in Tennessee almost, I think, for their last, how many matchups they've played in Tennessee? They keep playing there. But it's like, that is the trip everyone, if the Titans are on the schedule, Bills fans are crossing their fingers that it's in Tennessee because they love their trips down to Nashville.
No doubt. Well,
awesome, my man.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
No, my pleasure as always, bro. Teron Davenport, ESPN there. One of the best in the business. Make sure you follow his work over at ESPN. I'm going to take a timeout. I'm going to get to this break on time. Zach Hicks, Cover One, and SI covering the Colts. We're going to talk a little Indianapolis Colts. It's coming up next here on WGR.
WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Big thanks again to our man, Teron Davenport of ESPN, joining us last segment to talk some Titans who are sticking in the division, the AFC South. And my next guest joining me on the Western Hotline is Zach Hicks. He's the lead analyst over at SI Colts. He's a contributor over with my boys at Cover One, and he joins me again here on the Western Hotline. Zach, good afternoon to you, my friend. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
No, my pleasure. I'm glad we're finally getting to do this, and I think it's a great time because it's that part of the off season where kind of looking in this conference, which is just a loaded conference full of teams that I think all have maybe a claim. I mean, there are six, maybe seven teams that could all claim to say, like, hey, we're a contender. And I think the Colts are right there in that conversation, and obviously a team that I thought was a play or two away from potentially stealing that game in Buffalo in the wild card game last year. Zach, I wanted to kind of start with you, you know, and one of the reasons I had you on is some of the film work you were doing this week on Carson Wentz, talking about areas of where you think you can find some improvement in his game and things he could be potentially working on. I want to start with Wentz because I think he's sort of the end-all be-all for this team. Now, this is a team that got to the wild card round last year, a team that I thought was very competitive with a quarterback that, let's just face it, did not have the juice left in that arm. With a quarterback with plenty of juice in the arm, are you expecting this offense in the team in general to take a step this year, knowing that the division also got a little bit more competitive with, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville, and obviously just talking with Teron and getting Julio Jones in Tennessee? Is this a team, and particularly an offense, that's sort of ready to take the next step with a quarterback that I think a lot of people are probably doubting?
Yeah, you know, I think they can take that next step. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, set in stone by any means because, like you said, Phillip Rivers definitely didn't have that juice. He couldn't really stretch the ball down the field, and it did limit parts of their offense. But, you know, it's not like Phillip Rivers played horribly last year or poor at all. You know, he was, I believe he finished last year 12th in DVOA. He was sixth in EPA per play. He had a really strong year for the Colts, and part of that is the Colts system and the players the Colts put around him. But you know, his accuracy in the short game, his just ability to diagnose what's going on pre-snap. I thought Phillip Rivers was excellent last year for a guy with no juice, and saying, you know, outright that the guy who was 34th ranked in DVOA last year and has had steady regression for 4 years is going to be better than that. You know, that's something that I've been struggling with and something that I've kind of focused on with my studies this whole offseason is what are some good things, what are some bad things with Carson Wentz. And I think the biggest thing I've come to is, you know, obviously the scheme and the players around him are going to be much better than what he had last year. And that could go a long way. Mm-hmm. But he really needs to take positive strides with his mechanics, with his short accuracy, with his ability to get the ball out, you know, in rhythm and underneath. You know, his deep ball is still pretty good. It's been pretty good the last couple of years, even with this regression. And I think that we're going to see the Colts offense be more explosive this year. But what we really need to see him is take those strides underneath, where, you know, an area where Phillip Rivers was outstanding and why the Colts were in that game with the Bills last year in the playoffs. Those are some areas that Carson Wentz needs to get better. So, you know, I want to say that they're going to be much better on offense or more explosive on offense, but we really got to see it with Carson Wentz because, like I said, it's been, you know, 4 years now with steady regression, and last year it definitely hit its peak where, you know, the team was awful around him, but he was not good by any means.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Benjamin Solak, and I mean, he's done over the last couple of years a lot of work on Carson Wentz, a lot of film work, a lot of breaking down, and one of the things that, you know, he sort of has mentioned is his inability to, with regularity and in smart situations, dump the ball down, use the running back in the passing game, throw the ball with anticipation, and throw the ball to lead receivers on short crossing routes. Those are areas of the field he's really struggled with. And those are the sort of throws, Zach, that are those layups, those opportunities to get 10 or 15 yards, get some yards after catch. Those are easy drive starters that over the last couple of years, Carson Wentz has really struggled with. And when you're talking about a backfield, by the way, that is maybe one of the best and maybe most diverse pass-catching backfields in all the league, this is a guy that's got to turn that part of his game around, right? I mean, they've got to be able to utilize the running backs they have in the backfield because they've got plenty of them, and all of them bring a different dynamic in the pass game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, speaking of those underneath route stuff, yeah, Ben does a great job. I follow his stuff, obviously, and I've known him for years. I've talked to him a lot about Carson Wentz recently. And I always think the funniest thing that he put out there, which what I think was confirmed by Sports Info Solutions, was that Carson Wentz only threw eight passes to drag routes last year. And I'm going through and charting all the pass catches by each Colts receiver last year. And the number one caught pass, the number one targeted pass for both Michael Pittman Jr. and Zach Pascal last season was the drag route. Michael Pittman Jr. last year had, I believe it was like nine catches on drag routes last year, and Carson Wentz only threw eight last year for the whole year for the Eagles. So it's crazy. You know, those underneath passes are a huge part of the Colts offense. You know, Frank Reich has a lot of, you know, he obviously learned under Tom Moore, like when he was really becoming a coach, and then Ken Wisenhunt when he was in with the Chargers, and then also some Doug Peterson, Andy Reid type stuff with the Eagles. And a lot of what, you know, he learned over the years was that run after catch ability. That's why they brought in guys like Michael Pittman Jr., Nyheim Hines, Paris Campbell. You know, they love that run after catch. And if Carson Wentz can't get the ball to his guys underneath and allow them to run after catch, that's going to be a real issue, because that's a big part of Frank Reich's offense. So that's really the biggest thing that we really just have to focus on early in the year is, you know, if the Colts are going to be a contender, Carson Wentz needs to be better in that area than what he's been the last couple of seasons.
Zach, I'm glad you kind of brought up Michael Pittman Jr., Paris Campbell. If you are looking at this offense, considering who's going to be at the helm, maybe this answer changes if Phillip Rivers is the quarterback again this year. Who is wide receiver one? Like, for me, it looked, especially in that game against the Bills, it looked like Michael Pittman Jr. was sort of planting the flag in the dirt and saying, like, next year, the future is kind of now, I'm going to be the alpha in this wide receiver room. I'm going to be the wide receiver one moving forward. And if I don't know if you believe that or if you agree with that statement. And if you do, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether or not that might be a different answer based on if Phillip Rivers or Carson Wentz is the quarterback.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because I think we kind of know what the roles and where guys are going to be position-wise. You know, we know Michael Pittman Jr. is going to be that X receiver. T.Y. Hilton is going to be the Z. Paris Campbell, if he's healthy, is going to be the slot. If he's not healthy, it's going to be Zach Pascal. That's kind of where these guys are going to be. But from there, it's kind of tough to say who's going to get the most targets, who's going to be the guy, because the Colts, you know, they love to spread the ball around. I mean, they're leading pass catcher last year with Nyheim Hines in terms of receptions. Then after that, you know, T.Y. Hilton was really close behind. Michael Pittman Jr. was close. Zach Pascal. So they like to spread the ball around. So it's tough to say a true number one receiver. You know, in a perfect world, it's Michael Pittman Jr., but I feel like he's going to be a lot of those underneath routes and stuff like that. So, again, that kind of goes back, will Carson target those underneath routes? And I think the biggest, I don't want to say like area they're missing, or the biggest question for me when I look at this offense is who's going to be that vertical threat? That's a thing that Carson Wentz has always had. You know, he's had DeSean Jackson. He's had Nelson Aguilar, Torrey Smith a little bit back in 2017. You know, guys who can get down the field. Is that T.Y. Hilton, even though he's kind of lost a little bit over the years? Is that Paris Campbell, who had like the lowest ADOT in the history of, you know, draft prospects a couple of years ago? Is he going to become a vertical threat? Are they going to send Michael Pittman Jr. down the field, even though his whole rookie season was underneath? I think that's going to be a big thing to watch early in the season. But, you know, I think if we're looking at wide receiver one, I think, you know, they have to convert. You know, get a conversion or something like that. Who's the guy they're going to? I think either Pittman Jr. or T.Y. Hilton would be that guy this year. But yeah, with Phillip Rivers, I would say almost certainly that it would be Pittman Jr. or Paris Campbell, because those underneath passes and the run after catch. But with Carson Wentz, I think whoever emerges as someone who can win down the field or win in that deeper intermediate route area, I think that's going to be a guy who really starts winning favor, or maybe even tight ends. You know, Carson Wentz loves those tight ends.
Is kind of my next question for you. Like, I wonder if, you know, at least what we're familiar with Carson Wentz is, right, is having those two tight ends, having a lot of 12 and 13 personnel on the field. I don't get the feeling that is like maybe what Frank Reich is going to try to recreate. So if he's not going to try to recreate a lot of multiple tight end sets in the field, I mean, and maybe did they bring back Mo Ali Cox?
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
okay.
They got Ali Cox, they got Doyle, and they drafted Kylan Granson out of SMU.
Okay, so let's say, just for the sake of argument, that they just don't really have the guns to really throw at a lot of multiple tight end sets. Do you expect then for a guy that struggles, or maybe it's not less struggling and less, I don't want to say ability. What's the word I'm looking for here? Maybe it's just a willingness to use the running back in the pass game in Philadelphia. Do you think now that he's got the weapons in that backfield, and knowing that the head coach and Frank Reich likes to use those running backs, and you mentioned Nyheim Hines being the team's leading receiver last year, do you expect like Hines to still have that big role in the passing game with, you know, it's the room itself, getting Marlon Mack back, Like, it's crowded in there, man. Like, is Nyheim Hines still going to be on route to be this team, like, really in the picture as one of this team's primary pass catchers?
Man, I hope. I hope Nyheim Hines is a big part of this offense going forward. I think it's kind of a bummer because overshadowed by Jonathan Taylor's explosion late last season was the emergence of Nyheim Hines, not only as a pass catcher, but also as a running back, as a pure runner and a running back. People talk about, I believe, Jonathan Taylor, and these are going to have to be fact-checked, but I believe Jonathan Taylor had over 5 yards of carry throughout the last 6 weeks of last season, including the playoffs, which is outstanding. But I believe Nyheim Hines was over, like, 8 yards of carry in those last
As a fantasy owner of Nyheim Hines, who is starting him in RB1 positions almost exclusively towards the end of the season and into the playoffs, what he was doing was unbelievable. And on what? At most, 10 to 12 touches a game? Like, not a lot of touches.
Yeah.
He was very efficient.
Yeah. Very efficient. And that's the best thing with him. You know, his first 2 years in the NFL, it was like 3.8, 3.9 yards of carry. And then the last year, he exploded up to 4.8. And he had, I believe it was 18% of his carries went for over 10 yards last year. Just a really good running back. And he really has improved not only as a pass catcher, but as a pure runner. And I think even with the signing of Marlon Mack, I do think Nyheim Hines should be the running back too this year and get those secondary running back carries. But we'll have to see how it all plays out. Obviously, I know that the Colts are really, really high on Marlon Mack. I'm a little scared of that Achilles injury. It's kind of the death to running backs is kind of what that injury is. So I'm kind of a little nervous to see what he comes back as. But honestly, man, with the way Nyheim Hines played last year and the way he was catching the ball and running the ball, I hope he's a heavy, heavy part of this offense going forward.
Zach Hicks here on the Wester Hotline. He covers the Colts for SI and for Cover One. Zach, you know, I think the defensive side of the ball is another really interesting it's an interesting part of the conversation around the Colts, right? And, you know, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago now, going out and trading for DeForest Buckner was a really big move for this team in solidifying that front seven. Is this a defense that you believe is, you know, right? I thought they did a good job at times containing Josh Allen, but when it mattered, I thought Josh Allen was sort of able to get the best of that Colts defense. Is the pass rush where it needs to be going into the season, considering the quarterbacks in this conference?
I don't think for 2021 it will be. I think 2022 is the year we'll see, hopefully, you know, big returns on this pass rush. Because when you're looking at the pass rush, you know, they let DeNico Autry and they let Justin Houston go. And people who just look at the raw stats would be like, oh, you let guys go who each had 8 sacks last year, or 9 sacks, whatever it was. So people think that's a huge loss. But, you know, we saw in that game against the Bills, you know, the Colts were getting no edge rush pressure whatsoever. Those two guys just didn't have enough juice for today's NFL to get constant pressure. And if you look at it, I believe it was like pressure percentages or quarterback hits and stuff like that. And neither of those guys were in the top 50 among edge rushers last year. So it's just, they were getting the sacks. They weren't really getting constant pressure, and the Colts knew they had to move on from that. Now this year, you know, they have guys going into big seasons. You know, Kamoko Ture, Ben Banigou really need to step up and show something for this team. And then they drafted two guys in Kwity Paye and Dio Odeyinbo. And, you know, those two players are both great prospects, and I think ultimately they're going to be really good players for this team. But, you know, rookie pass rushers, both were raw guys in college as well. I don't know how big their impact is going to be in 2021. You know, we might see more pressures. I don't know if we're going to see it consistently from game to game. But I do think ultimately moving on from those two aging pass rushers for Kwity and Dio, I think that was a great move. It's just 2021, I don't know how much of an upgrade that's going to be from last year. But, you know, if you look at it, last year, again, they were one of the worst teams in terms of pressure percentage off the edge and getting that constant pass rush, and they were still the 8th overall ranked defense for DVOA, I believe. So, you know, they were still able to be productive without a great pass rush last year, so I still think they can be productive in 2021. But I think we won't really see the benefits of this decision until, like, 2022 when those players have some experience and some playing time under their belt.
So I kind of, just to wrap things up on the Colts here, and I think part of the conversation around the Colts, Zach, is a conversation about the Tennessee Titans too. And, you know, I'm wondering what your thoughts of their move for Julio Jones, I think, right now in June, I think is probably receiving the right amount of conversations around it. It's moves happen in June, you know, other than a couple of post-June first moves. You know, actually, before I even get there, I mean, I actually want to ask you this question first. Thinking about post-June 1st moves has sort of moved my thought process into this question, which is the Bills and Colts have been most talked about as the teams that are trying or going after or potentially in the mix for Zach Ertz. Mm-hmm. If it's your decision, Zach, are you the kind of guy that says, at this point in his career, let the Bills have Zach Ertz, or are you saying, I would love nothing more than to put Zach Ertz in this lineup, knowing what Carson Wentz and his familiarity with him, and I think what Ertz's familiarity will be with the system already. Like, is that a move that makes a lot of sense for you?
If Zach Ertz were a free agent, I'd be all for it. I'd be fine for it. But trading assets for him, after all the film I've watched on Carson Wentz the last couple of days, which included me seeing a lot of Zach Ertz, no, I wouldn't want to trade assets for him. I think Zach Ertz is great at for who he is. You know, he's not the tight end who's going to win vertically with great explosion and juice and bursts and all that. I think he's a great leverage tight end. He's great at using his leverage to create space and get open. And obviously some parts of his issues have been, you know, Carson Wentz missing him a lot, and that's been just a big disjointment of that whole offense. But, you know, ultimately I just see, you know, you have Jack Doyle, who's a great blocker and pass catcher, who you'd probably have to move on from if you brought in Ertz. Mm-hmm. You have Marley Cox, who's a bit younger, who's a really good pass blocker and can be a good pass catcher. And then he just drafted a guy in the fourth round. I just don't see the fit with Zach Ertz, especially with kind of his decline in play the last couple of years. And honestly, one thing I'm kind of nervous about when I watch this film is there's a lot of easy drops. From what I saw. I don't know what the advanced stats are, because, again, he wasn't really the focus of my studies. But I was watching all of Carson Wentz's incompletions over the last 2 years, studies mechanics. And, man, there's a lot of plays where it just bounces off his hands, third down, fourth down. Like, I don't know. I'm not a huge, huge fan of it. And again, I like my tight ends to have a little bit more juice if I'm going to go get a receiving option only. And the Colts have two great blocking tight ends, and they have one who's, you know, promising in the fourth round. So, you know, if he was a free agent, sure, I'd look into it just for the relationship with Reich and this offense. But I wouldn't trade real assets for him if I were the Colts. You know, I think he'd fit much better with the Bills. And kind of needing a veteran guy who can use that leverage to get open.
So I guess that will lead me to the question I was about to ask you, which is about the Titans. Are you like, you know, thinking to yourself right now, the Titans, the move for Julio Jones puts them in a position to not only maybe be the front runner for the division, but maybe a team that now is giving themselves like Super Bowl conversations?
You know, I can, for sure. And I think one thing that I've noticed with Colts fans, you know, Colts fans are kind of hating on the move a little bit, and you know, I always say fandom's kind of a drug that people can't quit. You know, you always as a fan, you always look through your fan goggles and see the negatives of all your teams, other teams in the division, and all the positives of your own team. And I don't think people are realizing how big a move it is. You know, Julio Jones is a top tier receiver, like upper echelon, one of the best receivers in football. He's not injury prone. He's had one season of injuries. He hasn't missed more than two games the last 6 years outside of last year. He's not an injury prone receiver. He's a top tier player in the league. So it is a big move. But ultimately, you know, I think they can make a run as long as that defense bounces back and has at least a decent year. But when I look at it from a Colts perspective, when I look at the Titans, I know I've kind of sound a little negative on here about the Colts, but all I really care about this season in 2021 is if Carson Wentz isn't broken and the young pass rushers show some positive, you know, development for the future. 2021, I think they can be a good team, be a playoff team even, but I feel like their Super Bowl window, their contender window really opens up next year. And to get to that point, we just need Carson Wentz to show that he can improve and not be what he was last year and these young pass rushers to step up. So, yeah, the Titans is a big move, and I think they can definitely win the division and probably are the favorites. But as a Colts fan, it's not really something that I'm too worried about, because I'm kind of focusing on other things with this team this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Zach, thanks so much, man. Let's do this again. Obviously, you know, I think the Colts and Bills are in really interesting, unique waters right now heading into this season. And well, I'd love to have you back on. Continue doing great work over there, man. Big fan, and we'll definitely talk again soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Love it. Bills, you know, closeted Bills fan here. Sean McDermott was, when I was covering Washington a couple years ago back in 2017 or whatever it was, Sean McDermott was like by far and away my top head coach choice for a couple years. loved him, and you know the Bills hired him, and the rest is history. So yeah, huge fan of the Bills, and love what they're going there. Josh Allen also is a guy who I feel like I was higher on than most because I actually would have taken him in the first round that year. So, man, big fan of everything the Bills are doing there. And even though it was bittersweet to see the Colts lose them in the playoffs, I was excited to see them moving on.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously with Allen this year, the conversations around Allen are really intriguing and where this offense goes. Can they be better? The fact that they get Brian Daboll back. There's a lot of great storylines. Again, what it just goes to show you is how deep the AFC is. You could go through 6, 7, 8 teams and say, hey, I mean, here's my argument that they are a Super Bowl contender. And I don't think you could be wrong trying to say that, you know, the Colts, the Titans, the Ravens, the Browns, like these are teams, and obviously the AFC West. If Teddy Bridgewater can be just, if he could just make completions and not throw to the other team, like that's a team that you could convince me they could beat Kansas City. So it's just, there are so many really interesting storylines in the AFC, and I know both of us will be following along. And like I said, I'd love to have you on again soon, man. Great work, and like thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, appreciate you too, man.
Awesome. Zach Hicks there of SI covers the Colts and Cover One. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, as well. I'm going to take a timeout. I've got to get two breaks in here. Then we've got Jeff Risden. He covers the Lions. Scary moment here in this UEFA Euro tournament in the Denver-Finland game. And Christian Eriksen, one of the players, I think it's for Finland, or maybe it's Denmark.
It's for Denmark.
Collapsed on the field.
They have been doing CPR on him live on ESPN.
Yeah.
It's as bad as it can get.
And I just flipped it on. And it's, I mean, a little concerning. They haven't really, like, rushed him out of here. He's just in the middle of the field.
This is legitimately a crisis that's happening on ESPN right now. There, obviously, we don't know exactly what's going on, only what we can see, but the cameras have not cut away from it, and
it looks like his wife is on the field now talking to some players.
It's as bad as it can possibly be.
We'll take a break here on the other side to get you a quick update if anything changes here in this soccer game. Of course, it's on ESPN Live, as Corey just mentioned. We'll take a timeout on the side. 1 o'clock hour, Jeff Risden here on WGR. All right, I got to take another timeout. Jeff Risden, he covers the Detroit Lions. We're going to talk a little Lions coming up next, so don't go anywhere. Scary moment, obviously, in the UEFA match that has just now been suspended on ESPN. Christian Eriksen, one of the players in the game, collapsed face down and had CPR performed on him. I don't have any updates. Neither does ESPN. Neither does really Twitter or anything right now of what the actual state of the player is. He was taken off the field on a stretcher, obviously, but that is basically what we know right now. The match has been suspended, and for that, you know, we don't have much else for you. If we do, we will keep you updated throughout the program here on WGR.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.